your ring to go. We have some questions. I will talk in general, so it's not part of the lecture, because we have so much to say during the lecture. So one of the first questions that was yesterday by John. And you asked about, you remember that I say, we spoke about biases, and I say, it doesn't matter what value you buy, unless you do it for sense. And then I said, but still, little things can be the bias, because if somebody lies, or translates, I thought about this the day that I speak about translations, how one can choose another word, something which is not quite right, etc. But I bought an example from the book of Isaiah, if you remember, about Eved Adonai, the servant of God. And the servant of God that appeared in Isaiah, it appeared in two places. In chapter 44, if I'm not mistaken, it's verse 21. And in Isaiah 49, the two verses that my interest to is verse 5 and 6. Why? Verse 5, God said to the people, you are my servant, you do to be my servant and teach the nations the goodness or the goodness, my wealth, and I made you for this. In other words, I saw you from birth, I called you birth. In other words, and the Jewish translation is very clear, or the Jewish, the Hebrew, and the Jewish translation is very clear that he talks about the people. Even though it's always open, everybody can comment. In the more Christian, and I was with a friend at the church, and they said, no, it's very clear that it's Jesus, because he wrote about his birth. Can you see? So there's a very little thing, but it depends how you want to read it.
About, somebody asked about the priest that I spoke with. It's Robert Steiner that I mentioned here from. He's across the road, he's in Rondebosch. Do you know the church?
Team?
Thank you. It's the United Church in Belmont Road. It's a wonderful, wonderful community. And if you remember Harry Wingate, he just now, he works at this time. So he couldn't come, but Harry, also a wonderful priest, if you know from Fishhook, etc. There were some questions here. Somebody asked about books. A woman yesterday came to ask if I can recommend some books. Yes.
You also want to know about books, or you cannot hear me. I can see your hand up. Ah, you just indicated for a friend. Okay. No, I'm so appreciative. I'm smiling. I always love you. I find things to talk about. But it's important that you let me know if you hear or you don't. And here's another question, not only the woman yesterday asked if I recommend books. Look, I know that sometimes I sound flippant and I see the funny things in everything, so these lectures may sound to you funny. It takes me years to prepare every lecture. You can see how many videos go into it, so it's fun because I don't like to bore you, knowledge doesn't have to be boring. But because of this, many times I'm not sure which of the books to recommend to you. Here, for example, one, Nina Bloomberg, say, for example, she has a book from Friedman, of course, who wrote the Bible, and Richard Elliot Friedman, he's one of the foremost scholars of our time, and indeed it's a good book, so I can recommend it. There is Margolis' book about the Bible, but it's very old. Margolis, I studied as a student. Meaning at least 30 years old. Somebody asked about the notes. And a few remarks about this slide sometimes move fast, so you can't write. Don't write everything. It's more notes for me and for you. It's reference, if you see reference, write reference, nice. Or names, because I pronounce things sometimes so funny, my children think it's the comedy show, you know what I'm talking. So, I made sure that the spelling is from various Bibles, is correct, so it is for you. But otherwise, don't write everything. It's really not worth your time. Listen, because many times I give extra things that are not written. There is a but we're going to give it, to make it available with pleasure. So what I'll do maybe,
my ink funny enough finish at home, but I will find to print these notes and I will give one master copy in the offices or something. So if anyone of you want to take it, you know, in the library you can copy for 50 cents or something with pleasure. I have no secret, it's the Bible, after all.
What is the event that begin the Jewish year, that we see as the beginning of the year? It's very interesting. As you know, Judaism didn't wake up one morning and say, okay, let's be a new religion. It's all religions and cultures influence each other. And you know very well that Christmas is coming because it's from a lot of these paganistic things in part of it, etc. So Judaism, the beginning is spring. From a Jewish point of view, it's really interesting to say this because the spring is the beginning. It's nature, not necessarily paganistic, but it's nature. And for us, from a historical point of view, it's the most interesting because Passover is the beginning. Because what happened, Abraham was cognitively saying, there is supreme God, there is something bigger than us, etc. So, Abraham was the father of this, but in fact, the relationship of what we call religion, Judaism, started with the Exodus. And funny enough, Exodus is not the wedding between God and the community. The Exodus was the engagement. It's a sign of love. They followed him like an engagement that you follow and do this. But the marriage was 7 weeks later on Mount Sinai when they had the Ten Commandments. So it's an interesting, isn't it? How is it? So the beginning of the Jewish year is not like today we call it Rosh Hashanah in September, but the beginning of the new year, the Jewish new year, actually started in Passover. It's the spring, like I think it's some of the influence of nations. What the language, the Bible? It's written, it's in Hebrew. And isn't it beautiful that you know that there are 304,901 words? There is no change, guys. The last lecture is a big respect, it's a big ending. You'll see why I can say and what happened there.
Did things disappeared or something? You'll become more expert. But the language is Hebrew.
There is some Aramaic. Again, last lecture we'll talk about this. Aramaic is the sister language. Aramaic was the lingua franca. It was the language of the Middle East at the time. And there are Arameans. And politicians, they spoke Aramaic to each other. Each person, each tribe, the clans and countries spoke their own little language. There is a fantastic chapter again, I'll come to it in the last lecture, that they somebody said, speak you this. In other words, speak Hebrew. They didn't want the people to hear or something. And this. No, they said to speak Aramaic. They wanted only the politicians to understand. And they said, no. And they spoke Hebrew, Yehudit. And so all the people of the town understood which people wanted. So Aramaic. By the way, did it not ever occur to you that when you read the Bible, it says Aram Tzoba, Aram Naharaim, Aram this and Aram this. What does it mean? Tzoba was a city, and Naharaim was a place, etc. And the word Aram, before the name of the place, meaning that is the place which spoke Aramaic. This is the place that spoke Aramaic. So you have a lot of cities, you know, if you don't know it, you are puzzled by why is the word Aram in front of all these little towns. But it's actually towns that show some communalities because they speak the same language. Here's a question about the book of Esther. It's interesting. It's one of the last books of the Bible. Scholars also believe by time was. You remember yesterday I gave you the time frame, and the time was from 2000 before the Common Era all the way to the Persian. That's 333, sort of. Esther was at that time. Daniel was slightly after it. Daniel pretended he's around the same time, about Persian, it's the time, that's why one of the last books, it's the holiday that associates with this, with the book of Esther, is Purim. If we have Germans here, it's Fasching. Fasching is when everybody dressed funny, and you're supposed to marry making, and it's the one time of the year that they say you should get drunk, until you don't know if you're father or mother. And we see that other mother, it's true. Thank you. So what happened is that it's the parade with the funny clothes and the costumes that we have on Purim. The Purim is exactly a month before Passover. That's why Esther is the last one, and we started getting Song of Songs in Passover. You remember the five scrolls are the one that is the year round. Now, until today, when the children in Israel are going to see the parade, the fashion parade, and they have to dress up, etc., it's called Adloyada. Adloyada. Everybody said they don't stop to think the three words. Adloyada means until they didn't know. So, you're supposed to dress up. Funny. And that's the only time that I've seen the rabbi in drags. Cross-dressing is not allowed in Judaism. And I went to the Barachev, you know, it's in St. John's, not in Sipol, and I got a shock. I saw this blonde woman with nice plates, blonde plates, and moustache and beard. So, he didn't fool me, the rabbi. He's a wonderful, wonderful woman. It's from the time of the Persian. And last but not least, the tribes. There is no tribe of Joseph. So if we just take Joseph out of the count, it's 11. So we actually have, for Joseph, we have two tribes. You know, it's just somebody asked the question, that's why I'm repeating. If there are 12 sons, take Joseph out, we have 11. But we don't really have 11 tribes. We have 13. Because instead of one Joseph, we have his two sons. They got a tribe, Menashe and Ephraim. Ephraim was the biggest tribe and the most powerful, as opposed to the Judea. Judah and Ephraim were almost like a loggerhead. That's when the kingdom split. It was Ephraim that led the people to the north and said, we don't have anything to do with Judah, with Judea. So Ephraim was a very powerful tribe, and it's one of the two sons. So why are we not saying 13? Because I told you the division of the land, they divided only to 12, because one lady did not get any allocation. They're supposed to live in the temple, clean the temple, etc. Are you making sense? It's very interesting. By the way, the story of Ephraim is an interesting story, because apparently the people of Ephraim, they had lists, genetic. Do you know the story of the Gibeonites, that around the time of Gibeon, the judge Gibeon, there was the Ephraimite, Ephraim, from the tribe of Ephraim, they wanted to rule, there was a problem, fight between the other tribes and them, and they dressed up like the others, and they wanted to infiltrate, like, and the girls, they used to play as girls, and they say, say she bought it. No, because the people from the tribe of Ephraim could say Sibolet. They couldn't say Shibolet. And that is, I read in some literature, people that wrote literature about 100 years ago, they knew the Bible very well. And in one of the, when they refer the term, and you hear the word Sibolet or Shibolet, they talk about the ability of somebody to do something or not. It's about the tribe of Ephraim. Now something very interesting happened when John Davis gave me the question about the tribes. He wrote here some Hebrew underneath, but you be very careful when you write Hebrew in word. You know why? That it goes, as you put the word enter, the button enter, it turns the letter to the English side. So it goes from, instead of right to left, it goes left to right. So I had to decipher here what the Hebrew says. Now here it's okay because we are communicating, a private communication here.
That is very, and the last but not least, the sources. Sources.
On that yes, okay, thank you. No, no, it's important. Thank you very much. Is it better if I'm just, I just don't want to lose my voice. Okay, it's better like this because it will not ring in your ears. What happens is we do not, and in many of my lectures, many times I wanted to put something about who wrote a certain book, etc. And I thought we are not going to go there. It's a call that can take a year about who wrote which book and where it comes from, etc. In 1700, there was a doctor, a French doctor, Astruc, I think was his name, if I remember correctly. That's occasionally my Alexander Blooming, so, but it was Astruc. And he said that the Bible, there is too many stories appearing two times. And he was the first person to alert us that there might be various document sources that have been joined together into one Bible. So the Bible was not written just one. After him, many people researched it for the sources or documentary hypothesis. And there is a lot of argument who wrote what and is it from a few sources and who edited and who was the redactor, etc. I'm not going to get into it because there is no proof. There is the proof, just one question here was about do we know that there are different things? And there are, in one of the chapters that you can see clearly that it's two voices. In one of the sections when they spoke about young people, they call it Yeladim, and the other one that you can hear that it's another outlook on life, it's called Nearim. It's a vocabulary different of at least 100 years apart that we can trace. So you can see that there were different sources that were put together.
So, but I do not talk much about the sources and who wrote it because, like I say, it's, we will never finish. And today, is it moving? Yeah, question, lecture two. What's in the name? Today it's a funny one. I think there's an idiom in English, isn't it? What's in the name? What's the name? So, the name of the book, of course, as we say yesterday, we started the lecture about the Bible. It's called Bible because it's a whole library. I call it just Bible, but of course some people will call it the Hebrew Bible, even though we mentioned the problem with this. Some people will call it the Old Testament, there is some problem with this. The nicest maybe way is called Tanakh, the Torah, Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Okay. Now the name of the individual books. It's easy to guess or to agree that a name like Isaiah, Mishayahu, it's easy because the prophet Isaiah wrote it. Even though, if you read Isaiah up to chapter 40, and from chapter 41 onwards, you see very clearly it's not the same person. So all of these scholars say there was Isaiah 1 and Isaiah 2 and something you put together because it fits together, etc. But all in all, if it says Jeremiah, we can believe there was an indeed. We know there was a Jeremiah, a man Jeremiah. There is sometimes the book is called for the hero in the book, like the book of Esther, the book of Ruth, etc. So that's easy. Why not? Makes sense. Where is my...
Is the man here from the AV? No? I would like to have a laser. Okay, I will do this and you try to figure out where I'm going. Anyway, the main thing in the book sometimes is, Masih is running to bring us hands. Can you do it? Yeah. Just, I'm sorry about this, I forgot to ask before. If you, the main things of this, the books of Kings, it's easy. It's the book, the kings in Israel and the kings of Judea, and the disagreement between them, sometimes they fight each other, you can imagine, like brothers, fight something, but it's the kings, make sense. Sons, make sense. By the way, there's 150 sons in the book of Psalms. News for you, in the Dead Sea, you remember a few years ago I gave a course on the Dead Sea? There are 155 psalms in the Bible of the Dead Sea. It's amazing. It's so nice. The more you learn, the more you see interesting things. Proverbs. Make sense? Why would you call the book Proverbs? Because there are proverbs in it. So that all makes sense. But in some cases, the English names are logical, while the Hebrew names are a bit strange. For example, you will have the book of Exodus. You remember the second book of the Bible is called Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, etc. Exodus makes sense because if I ask you in which book you will find the Exodus, you will say to me, oh, see, you don't find it, not right there. It's in the book of Exodus. Exactly. In the Hebrew names, you will not know it. Why? The Hebrew names, especially of the Torah, are taken arbitrarily from the first verse of the book. So, the book that is supposed to be called, like in English, Exodus, because this is the formation of a nation, in Hebrew it's called names. When I came to South Africa, being naive as I was, I said to people, did you read the book of names?
No, there is no book of names in the Bible.
Only later I found out that it's not Shemot, it's not names. Can you see Shemot, it means names. There is no book by the name of Shemot. Why? The first verse in the book says, Ele Shemot, these are the names of the family of Jacob that went down to Egypt. And then it talks about the Egypt and the Exodus, and the slavery, four chapters, and then they come out. So, interesting. So many times, you can't, it's not a direct translation. In a way, the English is a bit more of the logic of the names. Another one is Vayikra. Vayikra is Leviticus. Leviticus makes sense, because the Levites, they didn't have a temple to look after at the time. They were the doctors and the social workers, and they were the leaders. If you had sickness, they used to come to them, they checked if it's contagious, and then they kept you away from the camp, or they brought you in. They were like judges. They were really leaders. So the book that mainly is about law, it's called Leviticus, makes sense, but in Hebrew it's Vayikra. Vayikra means and delayed. The first verse say that Moses, he read to them, he spoke this to them. What to do with the whole book? Can you see now? It's a very interesting, that's referred to the names of the individual books. Now, why did I decide to make a whole lecture on names? Names are more important than what you think. I would like to discuss three important aspects of this. One is, I think some of you are my age. Do you remember the American country song by the name A Boy Named Sue? I'm not going to sing it to you. Unless you beg. It's a joke. Now, A Boy Named Sue is about a drifter that he obviously had a little too much to drink the night before, and when he leaves in the morning, he said to the woman, if you find yourself pregnant, if you are going to have a boy, name him Sue. And the reason behind it is that if a boy is named Sue from kindergarten, he's going to have to fight for his life. Because, I mean, from kindergarten, everybody will tell you, don't be stupid, and how can you be Sue? And he said, if a boy is going to live without a father, he might as well learn to fight from babyhood. So that's a boy named Sue. And why did I bring this as one of the aspects? Because when you have a name determines from childhood a lot of your personality, a name is carried with you So you better make it, the Bible says in the book of Proverbs, you better let your name smell like roses, because a good name is better than good oil.
So it's not, it's important, very important point. So that is the aspect, it's, a name is part of the essence. I apologize, I didn't think about it before. Thanks.
The second aspect that is about this is, do you remember the movie The Great Escape? In The Great Escape, they run from the camp, the prisoners of war, the English ones, and the Germans, Benisako is hunting them one by one and pick them up. It's a fantastic movie. Now, of course, you look at it and it's you smile, but at the time it was fantastic. And one thing that made a big impression on me is this aspect of when you say somebody's name, there is involuntary reaction, because your name is something as if somebody touched you. And there is in the book, there, in the movie, if you remember, there is a scenery that somebody is dressed like local and he gets on the bus and then he starts talking. And he says, papers. And he gives the papers and he says, what's your name? And he remembers that, of course, it's all due to the papers. He says the name is exactly on the paper, whatever, Gottfried or something, really local name. Everything's fine, and the disciple knows that he is the one that they're looking for, Moshe or whatever. And this Moshe is so clever, and he answers the right answers, and he has the papers that look. And the disciple, there's a wall here, and you see, the prisoner won, and he gets on the bus. And just before the bus door closed, and he's safe, the disciple called his name, Moshe. And he turns around. There is something about our name that commands us to react. This aspect will come when we talk about the name of God. That we cannot have the power of God, over God. And therefore, we are not supposed to pronounce his name. Because it's like in the Great Escape, not called Moshe. This is not, there is something bigger than this. Okay. The third one, aspect of name, the significance of name, is Oscar Wilde saying, you remember he said, it doesn't matter what you want about me, do me a favor, just spell my name correctly. There is something about our names that if people already pronounce it or write it or something, do it with some sort of dignity and respect. And when we see now names of people, how they are named, one of these aspects always will come up. Therefore,
I summarize it. Okay. So, another very, very important issue in the Hebrew Bible is the wealth.
You see, when you say something, you name something, you create things by naming them. And you are part of the creation if you name it. And you see that God created the world. First of all, do you know that God created the world by word? And it says in Genesis, and the God said, let it be light. And it was light. And it saw that it was good. And God said, and it goes on. Michelangelo did not know the Hebrew Bible very well. He was not Jewish.
How does God create Adam here?
By a touch. It's totally different, then it's very foreign to Jewish people. Immediately when I saw it, I thought, wait a second. No. God named him, he breathed life into him.
Is everything is this, not by touching. But can you see the aspect here is of sensory, it's touching and this.
Okay. When God created the world and he says that he created the animals,
and then he made Adam a partner in the creation. He called Adam and said to him, will you name the animals, please? So Adam,
they marched one by one, and he said, oh, this is a horsey. Oh, this is a unicorn. Oh, this is the dodo.
Anyway, and then of course we know that he saw this beautiful woman, and he called her a woman. Of course, in wedding, they always say, Why is it a woman? Because she woos men. Can you see how beautiful? In Hebrew, it's much, much nicer. And I'm so glad and I'm so grateful for my friend here that brought my laser. Thank you very much. I saw you. Thanks for the effort. This is the word men. Okay? It starts from this side in Hebrew. Ish. This is the word isha. I was quite surprised when I was younger that it's not a full repetition. It's not ish and then extra ha. They say it differently. Interesting. Ish, isha. Look, what do they have in common is the aleph and the shin. Aleph and shin. Can you see? This one they have in common, the red. He has aleph and shin, aleph and shin. Together they have aleph and shin. But separate, he brings this and she brings this. Can you see? This word means fire. Physically, a man and a woman between them have the fire. Otherwise, somebody is dead man. I know that my father is slowly dying down to 60, but nevertheless, it all started by fire. Otherwise, we have no children. However, the most beautiful is look at this. This word means God. Yud-Heh is Jehovah. It's the Yud-Heh. If a couple comes together just for the fire, don't bother. A marriage will work if you have this and the spirituality together. It's the most beautiful, the thought of the word. Because, and it's not arbitrarily, guys, otherwise the word Isha would have also have the Yud. So it's very clear that together they bring the fire and the spirituality. Only then a man and a woman will survive. Are you with me, or because of the Hebrew it's a bit complicated? It's just so beautiful that I had to share with you. Today, yesterday I spoke here with the woman and she said that she has, I married her children, and she said, oh, the good news is that they have a girl, Eva. I said, oh, let me go and bring. And I quickly brought you Eve. Eve in Hebrew is Chava, Chava, and it's the mother of all living. In English, Eve. How Eve and living going together, I don't know. It has no special meaning. But the Hebrew, Chava Chaim, you know the Cha and the Yet, or the V, it means for life. You remember that when you clean glasses, when you drink, it's Lechaim, to life. So the word Chavan comes from life. So she is the mother of all living. Look at Adam's name. Amazing. Adama is soil, the earth. So now we started by having the earth. And if you remember in Genesis 2, the description of the creation of Adam is that God formed this man from the earth. And then he breathed the spirit into him. So the word Adama gave rise to Adam. Can you see where it comes from? And the word Adam, because suddenly it wasn't soil anymore, it's with blood. So the word blood comes from his name, Dam, because it's the first time that they saw the human blood. And then because the human blood, they saw it was red, the word red comes from Adam. So from the earth, it came from the first human. The first human, of course, the word blood. From the blood, it comes the color red. Hebrew, when you read letters in Hebrew, it indicates to you what is the meaning of the word. So even sometimes people study with me course in biblical Hebrew or something, I say, if you see, I'll call it comprehension, you know, unseen text. I said, you start, just pick up some of the words and look for the roots. Look where it comes from, because then you can work out where it's leading you and you will understand the meaning. So, who are the namers? If we know names is so important, then there are three partners in naming. It's the creators. The creators is father and mother and God.
Now, you might not know this, but when you've been busy with your husband or your whole wife, depending who are you in the car here, and you made babies, you didn't know that God was there, did you? And you thought the mother-in-law is looking, but it was God. It is very, very interesting that, don't forget that until there was the microscope, they did not know the role of women or the part of women in the creation of a fetus. So, of a baby, of the fetus. So what did they think? They could see visually when the male came and there was the spell of what they saw is still the seed. What did you call the seed? So they thought what it looks like. It looks like a farmer that seeds the ground. So if you read your Bible carefully, all stories of having babies are always depicted as the farmer who seeds, and the woman is always called fertile or not fertile. They look at the ground because sometimes they knew it themselves. They can be the best seeds, the best farmers, but if the ground, the soil was not good, was not a fertile ground, then the seed will never get catch. So this is an interesting how the women are always seen as the fertile ground, and the or it says that God opened a womb or not. You know, that is God part in it now. Is God, they saw from farming that the soil can be very good, the seed can be very good, but it's not working. Sometimes there was a famine, sometimes. And they're always associated with the powers, with God. If God allows it to go or not. And therefore, they say that the creation of babies is the same. The man is the farmer, the mother is the soil, and God is the one determining the end. So of course, if you are part of the creation, you are one of the three, then you're allowed to name the babies. One of the stories in the Bible, it's so cute, it's Yitzchak. Yitzchak, or the Yi is the Yi, and then Tzchak, it means laughter. It's very cute. It's one of the stories when they cannot have babies. God said, Abraham said to God, please, please, give us a baby and a son. And God said, yeah, you will be. Come the stars in heaven, that's how your nation will be. Come the same. A glaze in the. So, Abraham is laughing. He said, I can't make one, and you talk to me about the stars in heaven and the seas of earth. Mathematics is wrong here. And God says, don't laugh. And the next, in chapter 18, when the angels come and say to Sarah, next year you will have a baby, she's laughing this way. So, both of them laughing. So, God says, you know what? It's quite, we don't two of us agree. We're calling laughter.
So that was a real coordination between the three of them.
But in general, it can be any one of them. Jacob's children, Jacob was very busy making them, never naming them. It was the mother who named them. So Leah is a first wife, she had the first boy. Reuben, whoever speaks Hebrew here, and I know I have some. Francis is speaking with Reu, he's had a look. Ben, I have a son. She thought, my husband loved my sister more, but have a look. I'm the one that produced the son. So Reuben, in English you say Reuben or Ben or something, but it's actually two Hebrew words. Have a look, it's a son. Second one came, and he still didn't love her, unfortunately. Hey, you can't buy love. And she named him Shimu. Listen, I have a son. Shimu Ben, which was joined together. Shimu means listen. Here, I have a son. But he didn't care either. So, number three came and she thought, wait a second. How many hands the mother have? Two. So now that I produce number three, I need another hand. So now he will accompany me. So she called the baby, accompany. means to come with. If you know the Hebrew word is bayah, it's, you know, when you take somebody with the burial, you accompany him on his last way. So Levi, the word Levi is accompany, but unfortunately Jacob didn't accompany him. So when the forefront came, she didn't care about Jacob. She realized, said, of course. So she just go ahead and she called the boy Yehuda. Yehu, can you see the Y and the H? It's God. And the word Da is from Toda. I thank God. She doesn't talk to Jacob anymore. Because he's not accompanying her. He doesn't care that it's a boy. And she really producing sons for his tribes and all this. Next one is Issachar and Zbulun. It's two more boys, but it's not particular interesting names. Then she gives Leah, again, she gave birth to Leah, and she called her Dina. No explanation. Then her sister gave birth to Joseph, and in Hebrew Yosef, it means may he add more. She said to God, may you add more to me. She knew one, she wanted first of all one, but when he came, she said, Yosef. May you, your, it's a future, and Seth is egg, to egg more, to give me more. She hoped that she will have more, and indeed she falls pregnant. And when she gives birth, in chapter Genesis 35, I think, yes, it's 35, she's on the way, and they're going on the camels. Just think about this, and she's a woman with pregnancy problems and delivery problems, and she goes into premature labor. And while she delivers in the baby, she dies. And her last words, she said, I called him Ben. Now you know, Ben is his son. Ben Oni. Ben Oni is the son of my soul. If there are two possibilities, usually it's Ben Oni, the son of my soul. It's also on his power, and maybe she refers to this, that he's the one that drained her, took it all. Whatever it is, both of them are negative. Don't go in Benoni. It's negative from the beginning. Jacob, of course, could not live with this. You will not be able to hold the child and call him of your beloved wife. She died in giving birth. It's a very sad story. You are not usually to change on a deathbed. If somebody says something on a deathbed, it was unchangeable. And yet, he changed his name. Because he could not live with this. He loved her so much. And he called him Ben Yamin. Yamin is right hand. He said, may he grow up to be not Ben on me, the one that took everything, but rather the one that will give me strength on my right hand. It's a very nice name indeed. Okay. So now we have naming children. That we saw. Sometimes it's the father, sometimes it's the mother, sometimes it's God. And for example, Judah had a Canaanite wife, and he had three sons. And the first one he named Er, and the second one was Onan, and the third one Sheva. She named it. It's just I tried to pick up something to that you know I'm not telling you fibs. That it's totally discretion of the family, of this. It could be the father, it could be the mother, etc. We'll come back to this particular name just now later. Now, some names, some of the biblical stories, the characters or the story attached to them is so, makes such a big and strong impression that their name is immortalized. Do you say immortalized? Yes, by turning into a term. And the term is, for example, there is no surprise or there is easy to understand why Sodom became to Sodomy. Because if you remember the story, it's in Genesis 19, when the angels come to Lot, Lot lived in Sodom and Gomorrah, and they came to him and they said the people of towns are evil. And they, when the people of the town, the men, the Bible said, the men of the time of the town came to the door, breaking the door down and say, we would like to know the men. So if you know, and especially in Victorian time, you can't talk about homosexuality or know, you know, to know in the Bible can have the meaning of to know, but also sexually to know. So they said, you see, when the men came to know the men, and when they needed, they wanted to use the term, they took the word Sodom, because it's the story for Genesis 19. What is Onan? Onan is a very funny story. It's in Genesis 38.
Do you know there is something which is called Levirate marriage? Levirate marriage is when
a man dies and he has no children, his brother has to give the widow a baby. But the baby does not belong to the man that just made love to her. It belongs and it goes under the name of the deceased. It's in order to protect basically the land. Each land that God allocated to you must stay. And even if you didn't have a baby, you must have a baby. So it's the first time that I learned about it, it's called levirate marriage. I was quite appalled. Even though somebody told me more, they invented the tradition the same to protect the land. They have levirate marriage. But at the time, it was to protect the land in Israel. And then, when the first son, he married the woman by the name of Tamar. Read Genesis 38. You're going to have great fun. So he died. Can you imagine he goes to bed with Tamar? In the morning she comes and she says to Judah, oh, I'm so sorry, your son is dead. Jethro called femme fatale. Yeah, that's fine. So, femme fatale, boom. So he goes to Onan, the son, second son, and he said, do me a favor, there is a rule in Jewish tradition, you have to give her a baby. Wonderful. So Onan said, why not? Sex is good. He goes with his sister-in-law, Tamar, he goes to bed with her, and the Bible says something very interesting. He's having to make love to her, but they ask me to think, why must I give her a baby? It's not mine. It's going to be on my body. I don't want it. And it says that he retreated and he spilled his seed on the ground. By the way, God's fucking dead. Can you imagine the next morning she comes to Judah and says, I'm so sorry.
That in German, the word to masturbate is onanieren. Onan comes from his name. In other words, you make love, but you are not quite there. It's yes and no, yes and no. Okay. Now, we saw an example when the parents name the baby. Sometimes God is naming the baby. And don't need to read the whole thing. It's Hosea. All his life was an example. He had to live his prophecy. He had to marry a woman, and God said to him, you'll marry a woman, you'll have three children, you must call them so and so, and it's part of the prophecy. Okay, I don't want to go into it. It's not. But what is very interesting, another child name as a prophecy comes from Isaiah. I'm going to pronounce to you in a minute the name. God said to Isaiah, go near the prophetess. He means very near. And have a baby. And when the baby is born, you are going to have to call him Maher Shalal Hashbaz. Maher Shalal Hashbaz means in Hebrew, the Luthers are coming sooner than you can imagine. Can you imagine if your child is calling Maher Shalal Hashbaz? I wonder when the marriage certificate I'm going to do. Okay. We saw here two things. Let's go to the bottom.
Here, for example, the situation named the baby. The situation here, you remember, Rachel dies, and she loses her power, and that's why she named him by the situation. Bet on me, you are the one that pulled all my power. There is another one, is the daughter-in-law of Eli. She dies because they're losing the war, and the ark of the Lord is taken to the Philistine or something, and she's in such a shock, she's going premature birth, and when she gives birth, she called the child Ichabod. Ichabod, it means no respect, because that particular time in the history was a kind of a disaster. There was no respect anymore. They lost. She was the daughter-in-law of the high priest. For her, for sure, it was a in kavod, not kavod. So, can you see sometimes the babies are named by this? There is two babies, but I would like to go on. It's not. Time is short, so. No, I'll tell you this story. You remember I told you about Tamar, the femme fatale, who is wiping out everybody? Where it was made her. She knew she wanted a baby. Because she knew it's the only way to survive. Because the allocation of land must stay hers, meaning her children's. So she realized he's not giving her to her child. She's keeping. So she hid like a harlot. And she dressed herself up so nobody could recognize her. And she stayed on the side of the road. And when Judah himself became a widow, and he goes to his farm, she came to him and she said, "Wouldn't you like a little?" And since he was a widow, he said, "Why not?" So she falls pregnant from this liaison. And she 9 months later, she is delivering two boys. The interesting part is, guys, have respect to midwives. We're talking about stories that happened 4,000 years ago. The midwife knew that she carried twins. Because, you know that the first boy in biblical time, and in many cultures even today, first boy always inherits the male part, a third priest, and the others is by the older rest of the family. If at all, sometimes they take everything. It's a different in different cultures. But the midwife knew that it's a baby, they took. Why? How do we know this? Because she had with her a red ribbon to mark the firstborn child. It was so important, economic thing, the fact to be the firstborn, that she had red ribbon. Listen, today when you want a little thing, you go to the shop and you buy. If she prepared red ribbon, there were no shops of red ribbons. So if the midwife had a red ribbon ready, which is a big thing, to go and find or meet or whatever, then it was an important thing. Now, the very first story, I call it in Genesis 38, is when the bear starts, construction starts, the first thing that comes out is a hand. Not the head, a hand. And she tied a red ribbon over the hand, and the contraction worked, and the hand retreats back. When I read this funny enough, I thought that story, because I always find some logic and things in the Bible, and this time I thought this is a funny one. And I went to a friend of ours, he was a celibate at the time, and he said to me, "Of course, if it's a premature birth, it's very possible. One baby lies sideways, one baby lies ready. When this one wants to come out, he pushed the hand of the baby that lies sideways. It's very." When he showed me the picture in the book, I thought, okay, you see the body is there after all. Anyway, when the baby is born, the first one that comes out is not written on his hand. So he is named Perez. He's the one that bears. Perez in Hebrew, Perez, is to bear out. So the situation named him. The situation gave him the name Perez. And Zerah, meaning the shiny marker, became number two. Perez, it's important to summer, guys, because Perez is the forefather of him, David. So it's a. This story, you cannot dismiss it. Okay, names of part of the personality. Okay, no, I don't want to go. I told you I'm careful on time. What happens is that there is sometimes the change of names can be induced by the need to record a change in status or a wishful thinking. By the way, change of name until today is an interesting thing. My father was born with one name. I didn't know this. And he was very naughty. And he was climbing the trees all the time. And when he fell one day from the top of a very high tree, he went to hospital like into coma, and the, his parents ran to the rabbi and said, let's change his name quickly. And the rabbi said, and they call him Chaim, life. And he pulled through, you know, at the time that medicine was not as advanced as today. So he told me, you see, it's very important to change the name. You change your name, you change your luck.
So it helped him. I don't know if I believe in this, but look, there is a change of name, a change of luck. So, for example, we know that a change of name is due to change of status.
Abraham, how the Bible starts, tells us about Abraham, his name was changed to Abraham. The hey and mem, hey, ha,
meaning plural. Abraham, he is going to be a father of nations. When he's laughing and he doesn't believe, God say, yes. When I promise something, it's going to be done. And in fact, I'm going to change your name. And he changed his name on the spot. And Sarah, her name was Sarai.
Sarai, with Y, it's a princess. It's a woman of absolute means and wonderful. But her name also, the little U changed to Hey, again, to reassure her that she is going with the Hey, the plural, to be mother of nation.
Now look,
when Joseph was a slave, you know, you remember he was sold by his brothers and he came to Egypt and he was blamed, he was sitting in jail. And one of the things, in jail he sold people dream, and eventually when Pharaoh had a problem, he had a dream that he perturbed him, they called him to decipher the dreams. And he became the second of Pharaoh, to Pharaoh, he became the second to the king. And when he became the second to the king, Pharaoh gave him, it's a fascinating story, he gives him a new set of clothes. So the clothes indicate a status, and he changed his name to Tzofnat Paaneach. And it's an interesting because in Hebrew, the word Tzofan became a code, and Paaneach became to decipher. So in modern Hebrew, people say, oh, I decipher or something. They don't realize that they're using the Egyptian words and the name of Joseph. So can you see, it's how situation name people. People name something else. And it gives rise to a new terms. And it's, names are a very important thing. I'll talk about Naomi in a minute. And sometimes they didn't change the name, they just added. We know that Solomon became also, when God asked him in Kings, 1 Kings number 4, chapter 4, God said, what do you want? And you know the first thing that comes to mind when you go on the throne is that you want to be rich and beautiful, or maybe only women ask for beautiful, maybe they just want rich. He said he wants to be wise, he wants to understand the word of God. So he became Yedid. Yeah, the friend of God. Yeah is the Y. You remember the Y? I didn't put the H here because I didn't pronounce it. But Yedidia is the friend of God, beloved of God. He's also called Kohelet. Kohelet, it's come from the word Kahal, meaning the public audience, because the whole book of Kohelet, the whole book of Ecclesiastic, he's standing there and he is reading it and he's saying it in front of audience. When people came to the temple in Jerusalem, Gideon had another name, Yerubal. He was fighting the Baal. What about surnames? Surnames are modern innovation. Do you know it? Of course, you know from, I think they say from around Napoleon. By the way, I found out why. People didn't need a surname because even if you had to pay taxes or something, they never ask you for your tax. Huh? We born in the wrong era. In the old days, they used to say, you pay so-and-so. You pay so-and-so. They used to say, the Jewish community must pay the king of Hungary so-and-so. Only later, when there was more attention to individuality, they had to have names for simple people. That's when the names, the surnames started. So, how did the people in the Bible go? They went by their name, first name, with the father name or mother's name. In case, like we know Yoav ben Tsruya, here I give example, Yoav the son of Tsruya. Tsruya was the sister of crazy. Because obviously she was more important than her husband. She was the sister of the king. So it's not called Yoav, the son of whoever was the father. It's called Yoav, the son of the mother, because the mother was important. So it's usually by the name Yoav, let's say, and his father or the mother, let's say. Also the name of the clan. In here, just the father, it's Laban Ben Betuel. And sometimes it's the clan of the tribes of the city. You say in the book of Ruth, it says, Elimelech of Bethlehem, Yehuda. Of the city, Bethlehem, in the tribe of Yehuda. So people like this, they could find them easily, no surname. Sometimes the Bible has fictitious names. And this is the wonderful, wonderful story. The Bible sometimes wants to tell us a story to teach us a lesson. Today I spoke with a very young woman. She spoke about Job. And the first chapter of Job and the last chapter of Job is actually a story that was added in order to capture the imagination. It's not really part of the philosophy of the book. And how do you know this? From little details in the text. If I have time last day, because I know I have 5 minutes to finish, so I cannot go on this, but I must tell you about the book of Ruth. Ruth is a historical character. We have for genealogy to emphasize that it's important for us to know. One of the absolute essence of Judaism is that it's not incest. When I read the Cider House Rules or something, and I hear about incest, this is something which is so abhorrent because you destroy the race if you have incest. Now then you, I mean, I talk about 2000 before the Common Era, so it is important always to know who the father and who the mother are. So it's always when historical characters are involved, it's always very clear who is the father and mother. And therefore, Ruth is the real name of a real woman. Boaz, later on she married him and they are the forefathers of King David. So they are important. But all the other characters in the books, it so they start names to do with the story. So Naomi is the pleasant. Naomi is pleasant, Naim. She was the pleasant mother-in-law. Elimelech, it's my God is my family is my king. The two sons that are dying there is Mahlon and Kilayon. Mahlon is sick and Kilayon is dead. Now nobody's going to call his children sick and dead. Not names. By the way, Oprah, do you know Oprah? She said that her mother wanted to call her Oprah, but she spelled it wrongly. Okay. Names of God. God has many names, not names, descriptions. El-Elyon. El-Elyon is the God. Elyon is above. El-Kano. It can be the zealous God or the created God. El Shaddai. Guys, it's the nicest Shaddai is my dress. Don't look too close. El Shaddai is God of the breast. God of the feeding. God of the abundance. What a beautiful, it's the God the provider. Today you hear songs or in churches I hear a lot, El Shaddai. What they mean is the God of abundance. The God of like a mother that loves, and it's quite amazing. And he has many, many more names. But the real name, description, but the real name of God is Yud Hei Vav Hei. And nobody knows how to pronounce it because it's YHWH. How will you pronounce? and you are not allowed, and we come back to my first the part of the essence of God, the essence of man, and see the essence of you, how can we, how can you see me in 2012 discuss the essence of God? It's so much beyond us, so we are not supposed to know it. How can we call him by name and have power over him, like the great escape? Can you see? How can we write it? So we are not supposed to write it. We are not supposed to pronounce it. We look at it and we say nothing. If you want ever to write it, to my students, I say, you only write the head because of the two tongues that appear. So what is the meaning of the name of God? So I want to show you something to end. Then, no, what is means Hashem? Hashem means the name. So when you want to say God, you don't say it, you say the name. But I can't say the name, I only meaning. And here comes the first word, it's Haya. This word meaning everything that was. Everything that ever have been until this moment is this word. This word means Hove. It's this exact moment where we are. What you and I and what we're doing this moment. And this word means everything that will ever be. Now look at the three of them together. Together, these three, if you reflect them and you put them one on each other, it means the name of God. This is, so God's name, the real name, is everything and anything that every person, every spirit, every goodness that ever was, is, that will be. Amazing, isn't it? Thank you.